what I want to do, I've got very few slides here. Though some of you from K-State have heard me pontificate about this before. But I'm going to talk a little bit about what I see as things that you need to think about if you want to be a consultant. And not to dissuade you from doing that, but to make sure that you're thinking down the right path and you have the expectations that you should have for that particular career path. Obviously, we have other consultants in the room today because you've been answering their questions on their cases, but at the end, it'll be a panel discussion, so don't take my word for everything on being a consultant because you've got several other people here that you can talk to also. First thing you need to kind of ask yourself is that really where you want to go? And you should have certain expectations for a consulting position. You're probably not going to work 9 to 5. You're probably going to work long hours because what the client wants is what you're going to do. And if the client wants you to work late because you want to get paid by the client, you're going to put in some long hours. So if you think that your schedule is going to be pretty well set, that may work on some days, but there's a lot of days where that's just not going to happen. Clients like to sit by deadlines. You work under contracts. Emergencies come up. Things don't go right in the field. Lots of things happen. One of the things that I'm out of the consulting business now. I was there for a long, long time, but I still talk to consultants. I still have friends there. And one of the things I continually hear is, I hired this person. They came out and were out in the field for about 4 hours, and they've about had enough. Well, you have to have a work ethic, and you have to be willing to put in the time, and you have to be willing to work hard, and that goes for any job. But when you're in consulting, you get paid by the hour, by the client, and you charge by the hour, so you sort of have to be doing work to ethically get paid by your client for that hour that you're working. And so that's why I say if you're not a person, especially if you're going into sort of environmental consulting or crop consulting where you don't like to be outside, you might want to rethink your whole idea about this whole thing. Communication. If you've heard me talk before, you've heard me harp on communication, both spoken and written. You need to be able to communicate with clients, with other consultants, with agency people, and with the general public. So you need to be able to take the real technical science terms, and you need to bring it down to something somebody else can understand. That's one portion of it. You need to be able to do sales. You have to be able to explain to your client why they should hire you because you're the best one out there to do this type of work because you know what you're doing. More importantly, sometimes, is the written word, because your lasting impression with a client or an agency, we were talking about the Corps of Engineers with Pierre getting a report. If you can't write clearly, they're not coming back to you for another job because that report is going from your client to an agency for a permit or something like that. And if nobody can understand what it is you're talking about because you can't write or there's a lot of misspellings in there, the jobs aren't going to come. And quite honestly, if you're in a bigger firm, you're going to watch other people get promoted ahead of you. You're going to watch them get raises, and you're not. So the written word is very, very important. It's the lasting impression that people are left with. You need to be willing to learn the business. You're not going to business school. You're kind of in the agronomy department if you're in K-State, and if you're not, you're in the soils department, you're in natural resources, you're in environmental science. You're probably, how many people have taken a business course? A few. Are you guys required to take business courses at K-State? No. Well, that's probably good for you. Many places aren't, but you know, you have to learn on the job to some extent, and you have to be willing to learn what's going on in the business because you don't necessarily get taught it as part of your college curriculum. You're not going to start at the top. In fact, when I was bringing new people in when I was running an office for Tetra Tech, one of our bread and butter things that we did was phase one environmental assessments. These are not exciting things to do. You bid them out low. But I tell you what, if I've got a new person in the office, I'm going to throw them on one of these things because it teaches several things. You have to go do research on maps, historical things, because phase one environmental assessment is all about what happened at that site historically and what's the liability for the person buying it. So you got to go look at the old historical information to find out if there was any spills or any dumps or anything like that going on, because you need to report it. You also have to do a site visit. So you have to be able to go out to the site, look around, and pick up and determine if there's things that you should be looking at on the site. You have to be able to write a report. You have to be able to synthesize information, and you have to be able to do it in a small amount of time. In other words, you need to be efficient in how you're working. Those are all things, as a boss in consulting, that I want my new people to get used to. And so you get put on projects once in a while that you don't necessarily like, but they're teaching you the business. They're teaching you how to be a consultant and how to manage your time, how to do data, how to find data, how to analyze the data, how to synthesize the data. And the other thing that the phase one environmental audits make you do is call people and interview them over the phone. So it also forces you to talk to other people to get the information that you need. So for me as an employer, that phase one environmental assessment is a perfect first project for new people coming in. After new people do, you know, 3, 4, 5 of these, they've had enough. But until you can get efficient at them so that we're not losing money on doing them, because remember, we bid them out low, you don't get to kind of move on. I would also tell you that you get put on projects that would appear to have nothing to do with what you went to school for. Take them. Learn the business. You never know when it's going to come in handy. I got put out on a drill rig. I came in with a PhD in soils and hydrology. And one of the first things that I ended up doing was going out on a drill rig in the consulting world with a bunch of geologists who were looking very deep at cores. But what they wanted for me was for me to read cores with them. And, you know, I've taught all my life. 0 to 60 inches, that is our domain. And I'm down at, you know, 30, 40, 50 feet, and I'm reading cores. But do it, because it will only help you as you move forward. In order to be a consultant, I think one of the things you have to really pay attention to is you have to be responsible and you have to be accountable. You have to be responsible for the work that you're doing, and you have to be able to work on your own time management. A lot of times what will happen is a boss will come in and say, here's your project, here's your budget, go do it. You need to figure out how to get it done in that time period so that you're not running over on costs. You need to be accountable for the information that you're reporting, because every consultant out there has to carry, well, should carry, liability insurance in case something goes wrong. So you're going to be accountable for the work that you've been doing too. So what does your employer expect? And I'm not hitting everything here, but I'm trying to get the main idea across. Your employer is going to expect you to work hard, because time is money in the consulting business. Some places I've worked, we charged our time every 6 minutes. Sometimes it was every 15 minutes. Sometimes it was every half hour. Those are few and far between. Every 6 minutes was a little bit much, and they really did that because you have phone calls that last 5 minutes. But you're charging the client for everything that you're doing. I mean, if you talk to some consultants, they're like, well, if I think about the problem for my client while I'm taking a shower, I'm going to charge them some time for that. So you'll find consultants that anytime they're thinking about a project, they're charging for it. Now, you can take that to the ridiculous, or you can take it to what's realistic and fair. But really, that's the consulting business, is time is money. The employer is going to expect you to be responsible, expect you to be responsive to the client's needs. while looking out for the company that you're working for. So you need to strike that balance between what the client's asking you for, what the contract says you're supposed to do, and where that line is in between what gets done and how much gets done and what you've told the client that you're going to do. Again, communication. I think if you talk to any of the consultants in this room, they will tell you communication is key and that they don't have time to teach people how to write. That's not what you came out of school to go find a job so that somebody could say, well, no, I'm going to redline this for you now because your grammar's bad and your spelling's bad. No, that's expected that you should be able to do that. An employer isn't going to expect you to know everything coming out of school, especially if you're going into a job after a bachelor's degree. That's just not realistic, and everybody understands that. But they do expect you to learn by doing. Ask questions. Don't be afraid to ask questions. The worst thing, when you're getting paid for your by time and you have a client with a contract that's expecting things to get done, is for your boss to say, do you know how to do this? And you sit there and go, uh-huh, and then go and not know how to do it and spin your wheels for an hour. How do you charge the time? You end up charging it to overhead. So if you don't understand how to do something, the best thing to do is to ask. There's no stupid questions, and if you get a boss that can't handle the fact that you're asking him a question, it's probably not a good boss. But you want to make sure that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, so ask the questions. Understand the business. Don't get up in the morning, go into work, have somebody hand you project work, go out and do it, put your time in and go home at night. Consulting, in order to really enjoy it and get the most of it, you really need to understand the workings of the whole business. And you might not understand that at first, but from the time that you're writing proposals and you're talking to clients and you're figuring out budgets and you're figuring out billing rates and you're figuring out liability and you're figuring out how to do contracts and you're figuring out who's going to do what work because they're at different billing levels, that all goes in to the business. And after that comes the technical, how do we actually get this done? So there's a lot of different levels that you can learn about. And if you start showing an interest in that and learning it young, that will help you in the long run as you move forward. And as you are promoted up through your company into maybe a team leader, a project manager, and then into more of an overall manager, you need to know these things because it's hard to manage people if you don't understand what it is they're doing. And so that's why I say, you know, I start people on phase one environmental assessments. I used to do those. I did those when I first started. And I still don't like them, but I understand the use of them when you first start out. Most of you have heard all the stuff on certification this morning. Just a word on certification or licensing. Don't ever take those for granted. Those are good things to have because employers look at those. They recognize the fact that you have some sort of acronym or initials behind your name, and those will help you greatly. And that goes for soils with a CPSS or Certified Professional Soil Scientist, Certified Professional Soil Classifier, or in the agronomy realm with the Certified Crop Advisor, CPAG. So overall, I would never tell anybody not to go into consulting because I absolutely loved my time there. You have something different going on every day. It's never the same. It's rewarding when you can get a job done in the time allotted and you've done a good job with it and your client is happy. And so if you are looking for the type of thing where you don't want the mundane tasks of doing the same thing day in and day out, you know, it's something to consider. You, depending on who you work for, you travel. I traveled all over the U.S. when I consulted. I got to do a lot of different things I never thought I'd be doing and got exposed to a lot of different areas within environmental consulting that I never thought I'd see. And because I gained that experience from a professional standpoint, it makes me better at what I do. I might not be able to go out there and do everything I've ever seen anybody do, but I understand what it is, I understand the importance of it, and I understand if I'm writing something up for a grant proposal or for a work order, I know it's needed because I've seen it done. So that's why I say, make sure that you're not limiting yourself, be open to lots of different possibilities. And I was telling the graduate students earlier today, where you think you're going right now, coming out of your undergraduate degree, I will pretty much guarantee is not where you're going to end up. You'd be surprised at the twists and turns that your life takes. So with that, like I say, if you're interested in consulting, I would encourage you to do it. You learn a lot. It comes at you fast. But if you can deal with that, then I think it's a good career choice for you. And with that, I think we'll turn it to the panel.
Thank you. And as far as consulting, those of you that are on the crop side, everything that Don listed on what to expect, it mirrors on the crop consulting side as well, with the long hours and asking questions and expectations, and written and oral communication is essential on the other side as well. So, I mean, this was, most of the day has been from a soils perspective, but we did have a crop consultant on schedule when Mr. Schurter was unable to be here today. And like I said, things mirror definitely across the board. And when they're doing projects and billing out, it's not any different than charging by the acre and figuring out what type of economic thresholds that you have and if you need to recommend, I mean, what you need to recommend to your producer. So it's all there, the same elements with it. So like I say, you can take all those points home, no matter which side of consulting you are with. So with that, let's thank Dawn, and then our presenters are going to be up if you guys have any questions for them.
I wanted to say one thing after Dawn and Diane said a few things about consulting. The only thing I know how to do, I've done it since I got done at K-State. I laugh a lot. I get to go to places few people get to go to. I have experiences that most people will never ever be able to realize. People call on me because I have a basic knowledge that few other people have. And so, as was described by Pierre and I and any other consultants who find it in me, you'll get to a point where because of what you know and what you do, you are contributing a huge amount to your community, your environment, and to yourself as a professional. Yes, everything Don said is absolutely true. There are times it gets hard, it gets tough. Anybody who's been a consultant say, yeah, but let me tell you a story about this. And there are a lot of, I call them war stories, which is probably not the right term, but there are so many times that I would not change a thing about what I have done as a consultant because I have had a ton of fun. I have had a lot of times when I wish I would have changed. But those are few and rare between. And then when you get to be an old fart like I am, you get to pick and choose your jobs. And then you'll have staff underneath you. So when it's 110 degrees and humid outside, you say, hey, you guys should have chosen that. You can stay in the office. Or when it's sunny and 75 degrees in really nice days, yeah, I think I'll do this stuff. So you will be able to create your life. It's a good, it's a wonderful, it's a great profession. Whether it be in crop consulting, and I did do that early in my career, or whether it be in environmental or soil direction. I just wanted to say that.
Does anybody have any questions from anything that has gone on today with any of the cases? Or specific to their profession, their careers, career path that might may have taken education-wise. It's open. We have about 10 minutes. If you would please stand when you say your question because the acoustics are just a lot better.
My question is for all of you guys in terms of working for yourself versus working for a smaller firm versus working for a rather substantially large firm like Tetra Tech. What has kind of been your experiences in working for the different sizes?
I started my firm at the last, what we call the last big recession, And it was coming out of school, and there was no possibility, there were no jobs. And so I said, well, okay. You know, I went to working with one guy and I couldn't get paid, and I decided that I can work for myself and not get paid. I mean, that's real easy. So that's what I did. And just never changed, never left that. But I said about 5 years ago, one of the things about consulting, especially the one shop operation, you know, I had anywhere from four or five people working with me and working for me at a time. But, you know, I reached the point where about 5 years ago, I said, you know, there's got to be some kind of exit strategy here. You know, how am I going to end and still be, you know, still be operating and not be, you know, personally responsible for trying to keep a business operating all the time. And that's why I ended up, I saw a great opportunity to merge with another company. And that's how what happened with me. I say, though, that working for yourself has tremendous rewards. And I said it this morning, we had a whole bunch of discussions about this morning's sessions about opportunities and what we do. But I did say about the great thing about environmental consulting and owning your business is that you get to work half time. You can choose which 12 hours, the first or the second.
I think I have owned my own company and I have managed an office out of Minnesota for Tetra Tech, so from a one-person operation to an international operation. It depends on what you like. I mean, there was advantages to owning my own company and working on your own kind of would mirror what peer had to say. I think at one point I worked out of my house with my own company, and I think I got tired of walking by the computer when I should have not been working and thinking, well, you know, I could just get this done, or I could just get this done, and it never went away. And so when Tetra Tech came along and asked me to open up a Minnesota office for them, I kind of jumped at the chance because I didn't have to be my own IT person anymore, I didn't have to be my own accountant anymore, I could focus on the work and the project. And I had the backing of a very huge firm behind me, and with that comes opportunities to do lots of different types of projects that you don't necessarily get access to, or at least I didn't, as a sole person in the company. You know, I think, like I said, you have to kind of figure out where you like to fit. I've also worked at medium-sized firms, and, you know, it depends on the types of projects that you like to work on, the type of work that you want to do, and do you need that interaction, you know, across the country with people that work for the same company that you do. Sometimes I think you can get lost in a big firm, too, and it's harder to shine sometimes. But, like I said, it's sort of a personal choice. I have worked for bigger firms.
I've worked for both larger firms, medium-sized firms, and small firms. Small firm, it's dicey. It's feast or famine. And I imagine that's where it is more and more. Because you're living by the projects, and you're scrambling all the time trying to market and get those projects. Don said in your career you have to learn how to market. Actually, that's my favorite part of work. Because I make all my clients my friends. I become owners in their problems, and we have great friendships. That's where I laugh at. Large firms, especially if you start out with a large firm, it's hard to shine because you're learning the ropes. You're going to be given relegated jobs to think, oh, I don't want to do this. Oh, by the way, I still need to pay clients. But I work for a somewhat large firm now. It's not like Tetra Tech, which is a mega firm, but I work for a large engineering firm. But again, as I said when I was up there, they don't really get what I do necessarily, but they see what I do has great value, and it's getting called on more and more and more. And in fact, what they're seeing is people are specifically calling for what we, you know, for what I do. I'm the only soil scientist in the firm. They're going, there must be something to do. So as you gain your expertise, and if you have a commitment to excellence, it doesn't matter what size firm you're in,
I'm going to add one thing, and I'm going to reiterate something that Don said. And I get applications. I always have been get applications. A lot of them still do. I actually have been recruiting. I've hired two people just in the last couple of months. There are great opportunities, but I'll tell you right now, just back up what Don said. If there's one class that I'm going to, and I've said this a million times, if there's one class I'm going to tell you is the most important class in your time, is technical writing. If you can write, you're going to get hired.
Yes.
If you can't write, I'm not going to bother hiring you. I'm just going to tell you that right now.
I have to support what you've said. I get reports PhDs have written. You make both of us just scream, where did this idiot come from? Write it, have somebody edit it, rewrite it, re-edit it.
And that's what technical writing does for you. It doesn't mean that you personally, you just have to know the proper way to put that report or whatever that you need to put together. But you need to, if you need help, you need help. But to know the structure and to know how things need to be, and keeping it straightforward and simple. Don't try and complicate things that aren't complicated.
Make things so that it can be read from any angle, and precisely say one thing that can't be misconstrued.
And Dawn brought up the one other thing that she brought up that was very important, and that is that as the consultant, your job isn't to make things more complicated. Your job is to make it as simple as possible for your client. They need to, you know the jargon, that's great. They don't need to, that's why they hired you.
Okay, Sayers, that would be English 516, written communication for sciences, and you can use that for your second communication on us.
Let me sort of not just agree, but go beyond what they're saying. That the second most important class I had for me, which really blew the doors open for me, both academically as well as career-wise, was soil judging. It's one unit class, for a couple of hours a week. But it's not that you have to go out and do soil judging. The issue was that this was an activity where I got to take all of my soil science classes and apply them in the field, and I had to do it quickly. And I had to do it over and over and over. I had to memorize the soil taxonomy. I had to learn things backwards and forwards. And then I went to these regional contests where you have fun, but you're also really competing. And the bottom line was is that it really just sort of sharpened all of the edges. And so, I know that there are seed judging contests out there. I know that there's, animal judging contests. But there's whatever kind of internship you look for, the one that actually gets your hands dirty and on the actual materials, that's the stuff that's really going to change it for you. And I'm not saying you're on the wrong track, but I'll tell you what, if I hadn't taken that soil judging stuff, I know that I would not be where I'm at now.
We can probably take one quick question, because I know a lot of you have been here since 1 o'clock and you're ready to get up and get moving. So if we have one more question, we'll get that quickly answered. Go ahead.
Can you comment on how you balance work-life issues?
No, I can't. Sorry.
What's the long hours? I mean, you're talking long hours, you're talking travel. How do you manage that with families and spouses, and how do you balance that?
You do. Yourself? I mean, it's just, you just make it work. I've raised a family of four kids, and I've had a lot of great experiences. I've traveled, and sometimes I get to travel with family, and sometimes I don't. And right now, actually, most of my family's grown up, and my kids are grown up and gone, and so now I travel even more. But there is a balance. But one of the advantages is that as a business owner too, is that yes, I work many, many long hours, but I also take the time when I see the time. And when, at that moment, I can just say, I'm going to stop right now. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to take a few hours and go do this.
I was going to say, even working for a large firm, I've had that ability. Like here, I raise three kids. They're all grown. And that's the key. You find ways to balance. So, yeah, there are long hours, but that's it. When I was a regional manager and a department manager, I also told my staff, your number one job is to be a husband and father to the men and a wife or a mother to the women. That's why I kept things in perspective. So you do have to find your balance.
And I would just interject, since I don't have children, I don't have a husband, but if you're in that boat, you need to make time. You have to be able to tell yourself you're going to take a break. I mean, I don't have the same compelling reasons to say, oh, time out, I'm going to a play or I'm going to a football game. But I think just for your sanity, you have to tell yourself that you're going to make some time that's downtime from work. That's important.
Well, good. Well, with that.